Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So no real surprise there that Joe Walsh would be against the big spending bill, which I think we desperately need. We need to shore up the social safety net that's been under attack for the last several decades. We need to help our seniors. We need to help in so many areas. But good to talk with Joe. Anyway, lots to get to on this infrastructure bill. How are we going to get this through? How's Joe Biden going to be able to keep the Democrats together? So far, everybody on the same page. And I think that has all the credit to this administration and to Biden for knowing how to maneuver to this point. But here to share some thoughts on how maybe we get it across the goal line, I've asked Bill Scheer to come talk with us. Bill's a contributing editor over at Politico Magazine. Also does a ton of work on his own at BillScheerMedia.com. Bill, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be with you. Also note, I'm also contributing now at the Washington Monthly.
Okay. I'm going to make a note of that because I always love your stuff, and I hope people will take a look at it, and we'll get links out on that as well. So let's go with the infrastructure thing. Surprised where we are? Surprised we've gotten to this point?
You know, I'm not. You know, I've said on a couple of shows going back a few months now that I thought it had a 60 to 70% chance of passing. And people would always, you know, raise their eyebrows and saying, really, you're that optimistic? I mean, so I wasn't making a flat prediction, and we're not all the way there yet. But I always felt, just by looking at what people were actually saying, that there were a considerable number of Republicans in the Senate that want to do this. And it may not be because they're saints. It may be because they want to try to restrain the rest of the Democratic agenda. It may be because they want to get the obstructionist label off their back so they can feel freer to obstruct other things without getting called that. But, you know, McConnell was always saying, you know, fairly positive things about it. And, you know, a lot of people assumed that was another Lucy in the football trick. But you know, McConnell front stabs you. He's not a backstabber. He's a front stabber. So I feel like he tells you where he stands. And when he was saying, look, you know, I'm open to this, my attitude was, I think he's open to this. And here we are.
Yeah. And well, I think because he knows he's going to get a lot of stuff to take back to Kentucky. And this is the thing that that Biden has done that the former guy would have never done. You look at a lot of the investments they're talking about, could have overly, you know, benefit rural communities and what would be considered, you know, red states.
I mean, one of the dynamics here is that Republicans knew if they didn't cooperate, Democrats could do it anyway. There is the reconciliation escape valve that lets you circumvent the filibuster. So that was a helpful tool to say for Republicans to conclude, you know what, better I get a piece of this and shape it and get some credit for it, than allowing the Democrats to get credit for everything.
Yeah, but the Republicans would have taken credit for it anyway. How many did you see walking around saying, you know, be glad we got you this money from the last rescue plan?
Yeah, I always heard people, I'd make that point, I would get that counter all the time. And look, I'm sure they would try, but it's not the easiest thing to do to take credit for the thing that you literally did not vote for. and this whole way, Republicans have never had any kind of message strategy to undermine support for it. They haven't tried to make an argument that this is ideologically, philosophically bad. Now, they want to say other things that Democrats want to do in reconciliation are bad. But when it comes to roads, bridges, water, broadband, they haven't complained about that. They want to do it, want to get the credit for it. They may want to stop there and not do anything else, but they were willing to do that much.
No, and this is where, you know, in the last segment, I talked with Joe Walsh, and he said he would have voted for the bipartisan bill overwhelmingly, just not this big bloated one that's going to add to our debt and our deficit. And look, I care about our national debt, just like I care about my personal debt. But I also understand good investment. We need sound policy, and we need to invest in the future. And I worry about what I'm going to leave my kids and their kids down the road as our legacy, and what is going to help us move forward as a nation. And this kind of investment seems sane to me.
Both of them. Traditional infrastructure and the broader, you know, human infrastructure
Correct.
Package. Now, mind you, what Democrats are talking about with the bigger $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, this is not being sold as deficit spending. This is not being sold as don't worry about balancing the budget, don't worry about interest rates, don't worry about inflation, it's all going to work out in the end. They're saying they're going to pay for it. You know, Joe Manchin is saying, I'm going to make you pay for it. But whatever we do, I'm going to make sure that we raise the revenue to cover the spending. So, you know, not everybody understands the economics of this. And I certainly get that there is an emotional gut reaction to inflation that people will get worried about and Republicans may use to their advantage here. But what's being discussed here is not intended to be inflationary. It's meant to be paid for. When you pay for it, it's not inflationary.
Right.
And now the challenges are going to be for Democrats to craft both prongs, both the spending and the revenue, that creates enough consensus to actually get it over the finish line.
And what do you think the chances are that are? I mean, you've still got a large number of conservative or moderate Democrats that I'm not sure that they're going to go for what the bigger plan is.
I mean, I don't think we're going to land on $3.5 trillion. You got to read tea leaves. You got to go a little bit under the surface with politicians' comments. But my general attitude is if someone makes an unequivocal statement, I tend to take it at face value. So when Senator Sinema says, I am not going to vote for $3.5 trillion, I take that at its face value. Now, maybe she'll do 3.4. Maybe she'll do 3.1. I don't know how far lower she will go, but I think we'll be lower than 3.5. Will they pass something? I believe yes. What that something is, I think we got a long way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, keep in mind here, this package as it is envisioned, I don't think we have ever had a bill like this ever. I mean, FDR didn't jam everything into one bill. LBJ didn't jam everything into one bill. This is intended to go across a very wide array of areas. You know, it's preschool, it's community college, it's elder care, it's climate, it's immigration. You know, it's a lot of things.
It's labor.
A lot of labor. It's a lot of controversial areas. And it's, in one sense, too big to fail. Democrats have to pass something. They can't just belly flop on this. But there's lots of places where it might get cut down because any one or small group of politicians could say, look, I'm just not there on that one. You haven't done the spade work to get the public behind X, Y, or Z, and therefore I'm worried it's not in my best interest. So there's a lot of work to do to make sure that there's actual concrete public support behind all the various areas. The top line seems to be fine. You know, when you right now it's in an okay shape. When you Fox News poll just had over 50% for $3.5 trillion. So it's not triggering a visceral negative response, but we got many, many weeks and months of debate. I guarantee something's going to crop up that's going to be controversial and it's going to make things tricky.
Yeah, it always does. But like you said, they have to get something because if they don't, they get slaughtered next year. And look, I think they may lose next year anyway, but without this, I think they get slaughtered.
Well, and that's part of the driving force here. I think there is a pessimism that they're going to lose the midterms because the president's party usually loses the midterms. It's not that they're, a bunch of Keystone cops. I mean, it's literally 33 out of 36 midterms that the president's party loses seats and they only got a few seats they can cough up to keep the majorities. So there's that sense of urgency. We got to get everything done that we can possibly get done. And you have to hope that that isn't biting off more than you can chew because it means defending a lot of disparate elements. I mean, right now, quite frankly, when Biden started, it was American Jobs Plan, American Families Plan. There was a rhetorical framework that explained the general idea of what they wanted to do. At this moment, I think that's been kind of lost. I don't think people really know what $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill actually is right now, because they're starting to jam a lot of things into it for these obvious, understandable political reasons. But I do think at some point they got to get back to telling the story about it. How is it going to help people in total? And that's tough to do when you're negotiating amongst yourselves. When there isn't full consensus and there's still a lot of jockeying between progressives and moderates, what's actually going to be in this thing.
And what is each of the bills as well? I mean, because, you know, the bipartisan one is strictly the, you know, the nuts and bolts stuff, as where the bigger bill is going to be a lot of the human touch stuff that has been neglected and really attacked for the last 40 years. So I'm looking at this as kind of like a 40-year reset, you know, hitting that reset button and trying to undo some of the damage of the last 40 years.
And that's big. I mean, this is a really sweeping overhaul of the social contract. So if they can do it, you know, it's pretty historic. And so in one sense, there's a part of you that's like, hey, you know, shoot the moon guy, go for it, you know, go big or go home. And there's another part saying, I hope you really thought this through, because I mean, you literally can't think of an historical example of how something like this got accomplished. It's a lot to take on at one time.
No, and this is where I go back and look, Joe Biden wasn't my first choice, but I'm very happy with him to this point. He on the labor front, he's done a lot of things I'm happy with. And pushing this through, this is a lot more than I thought. I was expecting Obama 3.0, half measures, reaching out, getting beaten with the olive branch, that kind of stuff. He's proven to be a much better, leader than I expected.
Well, he's setting a high bar for himself right now, but you know, we don't know where we're going to land.
No, I mean, to this point, even look, he's further ahead than I ever imagined he was going to get at this point. I'm hoping we get through it. I'm hoping that on the other side. But to this moment in time, he's further than I ever imagined he would go.
And I think with Obama, they entered in with crisis, with economic crisis. And while you can look in hindsight and say, hey, your recovery package should have been bigger than it was, at the time, it was getting higher and higher and higher, and then got scaled back a bit by the Democratic moderates in the Senate. And you saw there were kind of around 850 billion, ended up like 787. But it was a pretty giant dose of stimulus at a critical time. And it didn't make everything become magically better overnight, but it sure as hell stopped the free fall.
And it worked.
Obama gets, he wouldn't have got reelected if it didn't work.
Yeah, and it worked. I mean, at the end of the day, it worked. And I was arguing at the time it should have been much bigger and much chunkier and all of that, because I wanted to see that priming of the pump, that massive shock to the system. And we didn't get it, but it still worked. And I argue it would have worked a little bit faster and a little bit better had it been chunkier. And I think that was the lesson that Biden and this administration, I think, learned from that.
Well, that package, it was largely crisis oriented, some elements that had a longer range vision. You know, they're trying to move the ball forward on green energy, for example, but they couldn't get all the way with a bona fide, carbon cap overhaul. What Biden's talking about here, you know, he did his crisis bill, he did the rescue plan, and that was almost strictly short term focused. And now he's separating a different bill. It's intended to be a 10-year plan, which Obama didn't try something with that kind of range. I mean, there was an American Jobs Act that he proposed that went nowhere. So he did try that, but just couldn't get his own party behind it, let alone the Republicans. Biden's trying something far grander than Obama tried to do, or again, really, I think anybody has tried to do in one single package.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hopeful. Because we need it, and we need that reset. I'm hopeful. Where do you see the main obstacles? Is it Sinema? Is it Manchin? Or do you see someone coming out of nowhere and being the obstacle?
Well, we got to get into the House. So there's this dance around the sequencing. When do we pass one or both bills? And you have the progressive faction led by AOC saying no bipartisan infrastructure bill until we do reconciliation. And there's some murmuring on the moderate side saying, hey, maybe we're not going to do reconciliation until you do the bipartisan bill. And we don't know if either faction's really going to throw their weight around. Neither side has made really clear what their numbers are and how serious that threat is going to be. And we don't know how many Republicans are going to come on board for the bipartisan bill, which also complicates how many people do you need to upset the apple cart. You don't really know. If four Democrats defect on a party line vote, you don't get a majority. But if Republicans come in on something, the math changes. And it's a big if, I don't have evidence they're going to do this yet. If you had four moderates who said, look, we're not even going to pass the budget resolution, again, to the parliamentary weeds here, you got to do the resolution before you do the reconciliation. that's under that's a reconciliation. If you want to, if you want to go around the filibuster, you got to go through this cumbersome process, and the resolution comes first. If the moderates say, "Look, I'm not even going to do the resolution until you do by the bipartisan bill," that really grinds everything to a halt. And you know, Pelosi right now is has been tilting towards the squad side of things, saying we got to do both at the same time. But if he can't move the resolution at all, I think that math changes.
Yeah. So any, I know you're not a wizard or looking into a crystal ball, but you know, where are you putting your money if you were? Do we get one, the other? Do we get both? Do we get nothing?
I think we'll get both. I think the journey to getting both is going to be very rocky. To that. Just like with, you know, when I was saying, look, I'm optimistic about bipartisan infrastructure. Every time there was a setback, everyone would jump down my throat saying, you see, it's going to fall apart. It's going to fall apart. I'm like, you know what? Look at the broader dynamics here. There's people that don't want it to fall apart. So we're going to get over these obstacles. Democrats want this to work. So I think they will get over the obstacles. But there are obstacles. There is not full, clear consensus on what they can agree on. And it's going to take some time to get there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how these next couple of weeks play out. And when do you think this is going to wrap up? Sometime August? Sometime October, November?
Well, I'll tell you this. The child tax credit expansion, the checks that parents are getting in the mail right now, they expire at the end of the year.
Right.
Democrats don't want those to expire. So at the barest minimum, there's incentive to get this done by the end of the year. And some of the surface transportation stuff, I think some of that stuff expires at the end of September. And you have the debt ceiling issue mixed into all this, which is also going to hit around the fall too. So I would think we're going to solve this in the fall. But again, because you're trying to do so much at once, it is a really compressed timetable.
Yeah, I personally think we should have been getting it done sooner because we need the time for the political end of this, but it's got to get done. Bill, I appreciate the time. As always, great insight. I like the way you think. Hope people will check out your website, BillShearMedia.com, to check out all of his writings. He's contributing editor over at Politico Magazine and The Washington Monthly, right?
Yeah, as well as Real Clear Politics.
And Real Clear. You're just everywhere. And I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
It's a media empire.
Good stuff, Bill. Thanks so much, Bill Shear. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.